America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Probably not the best song to play when Alex Hollings comes on. He's kind of more macho than the song. But we're all about love, so nobody's hating on anything. So he thought we'd do the interview yesterday. I don't know, did you not know it was Labor Day, that you're not supposed to work on Labor Day? Did you not get the memo?
I don't think I've had a day off in like 2 years, man. When holidays come and go, it's just like this interesting thing I hear about from my friends on Instagram. You know, when holidays come up, I just assume everyone's working like me. You know,
you're like the one man gang, aren't you? Now,
I'm staying busy. That's for sure. But but over on the staff, we've got a couple of new guys. We've got some of the old guys still around. So, but it's definitely, you know, the transition from soft rep to news rep has definitely filled my schedule, I guess is the safest way to say it. You know.
Did you do anything exciting over the weekend? 3-day weekend? You worked.
I worked, but we went and had a barbecue with my brother and his wife at their new house, which was a very good reminder for me that back in the corporate world, there are some real benefits to having a regular job, you know?
Oh.
I love my job and I love what I do, but man, his house is beautiful. You know, his cars are beautiful. His big fancy German Shepherd is beautiful. You know, it was a nice reminder that even though I might not want to get up in the morning and iron my khakis every day, there are some perks to that side of life, you know, and it was good to see. I'm glad he's doing well.
No.
But how about you, man? What did you do over the weekend?
No doubt. I did a little bit of work. I was talking to Alex off the air about kind of I will tell you, there's been a series of crazy events that have happened relative to All Marine Radio. And I'll tell you one real quick. I sent my sister's interview. It'll air tomorrow. I sent it to a couple friends of mine. And one was on the air with me, and he brought it up. He's at a birthday party. He gets off the phone. Girl's sitting there, looks at him and says, "Can I talk to you?" And he says, "Yeah." And she said, "I was raped when I was 6. And my parents told me never to talk about it and that they didn't believe me. And I've lived with that since you were talking about living with trauma could you help me? Could I talk to you? So the next day they went to police station, and she started the process of reclaiming her life. She then on Saturday calls him and says, "Hey, I just want to thank you. You know, you've done more for me, and I hardly know you." And his response was, "Hey, look, I've risked my life for people I don't even know that don't even live in this country. You know, I'll do anything to help you." And she said, "You know, that girl's story that you were talking about changed my life forever. I should probably have as much courage as she did so I could help somebody. Could you call your friend and ask him if I could be on his radio show?" You're like, holy shit, man, what did we just do? Right?
That's awesome, is what that is.
And
you know?
That's about the third or fourth event in a sequence of these events that keeps happening to, you know, guys who listen and just in conversation bring it up, and all of a sudden, you know, you're having this profound conversation with somebody and touching their lives, which I think is really, for me, it's really important for veterans to feel that, right? That's the same thing that we got off on as leaders in the Marine Corps when you see a Marine finally get it and begin to go on his way. There's no better feeling than that. And now you're feeling it in your own hometown where you've come home to. You're finding that sense of purpose. And, you know, I think also, like, all this stuff I went through is now helping other people, kind of validates the sacrifice in some way. And it's just really cool.
You know, and I think that pain has an isolating effect on people, you know, whether we're talking physical or emotional. You tend to think of your hurt as a very personal thing to you, right? Especially when it's tied to a traumatic event. You know what I mean? So you tend to, especially, and this is a common problem with depression. When you're upset about something, and your friend asks you about it and you talk to them, it can help a lot to talk, but if your friend doesn't understand the nature of the problem, they think that you're just upset because you're thinking about the problem. It's difficult to have those conversations about depression with someone who doesn't appreciate what depression is, because they think you should just feel better now that you talked.
Right.
We talked once, you should feel better now.
Right.
Right? So what we end up doing is two things. The first one is we keep our hurt to ourselves because it's embarrassing that we're vulnerable, because we always feel like, oh, other people have it worse, or we feel like, I don't want other people to judge me over this. And then when we do open up to people, a lot of times if you open up to somebody who doesn't have a scope of what you're dealing with, they assume that they're patting you on the back and passing you some tissues should solve the problem forever, you know? And instead, when you're talking to somebody who has an understanding of how you're hurt, not just why you're hurt, I think it changes everything, you know? So through this radio show, you've got people all over the country, probably all over the world, that are getting a chance to listen to people's stories and understand that the way they hurt isn't very different than the way other people hurt, even if the circumstances are different, you know? And I think that's awesome, man. That's important work, is what that is.
Yeah, and you know, and Alex, you've been around this for a while, but when we conceived of it, it was pointed at Marines. It was pointed at veterans. And so this has kind of opened up, and I don't want to say exploded, but it keeps happening to us. Bumping into people, talking to them, this comes up, and then you just say the things that we know to be true. And what's really interesting, you know, those things are, right, things like, hey, you're not going to get over it. The best you can do is coexist with it, right? And when you say something like that, they look at you, and what do they say? What'd you just say? And it lands with a thud, and I made this up, but the truth needs no salesman. They know the truth when they hear it.
Good.
And that's pretty fucking profound, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good. I think that's the reason why it hits with a thud. It's not just because at first pass it almost seems demoralizing, but what it does sound like when you're the person who's there in the middle of you know, I always say that I tend to, like, for instance, I tend to be cyclical. I have my ups and I have my downs.
Right.
And over the years, I've gotten good at managing my downs, right? I can stay totally functional, and you may not, you know, your average person may not recognize that I'm in a down spot. My wife, you know. But, like, when you're at your lowest point in your downs, you know that things are going to feel better, but that they're going to feel worse against you. And so when someone gives you kind of those empty Hallmark card responses, you know, like, you're like, why am I even having this conversation with you? This is why I don't have this conversation.
I don't want to play whose dick is bigger on this, but listen to this shit. Okay, and this is why you have to listen tomorrow to the interview of my sister. Can you imagine, and just another version of what Alex just said, can you imagine having your children murdered and somebody walking up to you and saying, there's a purpose in this?
I don't think that I could, I'll be honest with you, I don't think that I could go on having my children murdered, you know?
But someone tell
me that I'm going to be okay.
Yeah.
Or that it's a part of God's plan.
Yes.
Yes. Would be.
He needed it more than you did. The hardest steel goes through the hottest fire. Your fucking head's going to explode, right? Don't.
God doesn't give you anything you can't handle.
Right. What?
It's bullshit.
It's bullshit. It's bullshit. Don't say that. And then somebody walks along and says, like they did to me, my fucking gunny. He's a big galoot. His name's Lance Y. He's a mountain man now. And so. He walks up and he says, you know, you're never getting over this. Like, what did you say? Well, in a very gunny-like way, too. He's trying to be nice to me, but he said, holy shit. Some of the most profound things. But I knew, you know what? I knew it was true. What he said, and I said, where did you get that from? And he said, Vietnam guys. And then he had my attention. And some of the most profound words, honestly, maybe the most profound words ever spoken to me in my life. You'll never get over this. But Alex, when you hear it and you live that, you know it's true. And the response, most of the time from guys and girls, they look at you and it's like they give this heavy exhale. Oh, thank God. Right? There is nothing wrong with you. You can't go through that and not be here. And be gentle with yourself. You're going to have ups and downs. Learn the triggers and learn the stresses and learn ways to release steam, whether it's music, meditation, or PT, whatever. And get through your day. You'll have a better day tomorrow. It's all right. It's all right. And you hear that and you're like, that's when you say, who the fuck are you? Like, where did you come from? Right?
And, you know, because it runs counter to the tropes that you experience. Everyone thinks they're supposed to say to you, you know? And the problem with the things everyone thinks they're supposed to say to you is that even though they come with the best intentions, they come with no sincerity. You know, these are the things that I saw on TV that you say to someone when their dad dies. These are the things that I saw on TV that you say to someone when their best friend dies in front of them. You know, and the truth of the matter is what people really look for, what people really need, isn't just a connection. A connection's nice, but it's an empathy that's born out of being there, you know? And I think this is something that you brought up when we were talking offline earlier. But that's one of the things that I really think, because, you know, the veteran culture, you know, the veteran population in the United States in many ways is divided from the general population, you know? So there's a subclass of veterans, of warriors in our country that, you know, don't get me wrong, they're Americans just like everybody else. They watch the same TV shows, you know, they like all the same movies. But there are different types of people, it's a different category of people. And a lot of times we're trying to, I mean, something that I do in my work is try to find a way to bridge that cultural gap between what I understand as a veteran and what I'm trying to convey to your average citizen as a reader, right?
Right.
That is one of the few things that is trauma.
Oh.
Unfortunately, trauma is something that veterans experience and civilians experience alike. The trauma isn't in the same environment or circumstances, but the trauma is.
And again, at the end of the day, Alex, does it make a shit's bit of difference if you got your trauma being raped and I got mine, seeing somebody get blown up in Iraq or Afghanistan. I mean, honestly, I signed up for mine. You didn't sign up for shit.
You know, and PTSD is something that we tend to connect to veterans in our mind, but the truth of the matter is PTSD is something lots of Americans.
Hello? Fuck. You know? Wait, let me just tell you, if you start paying attention and you want to become, and you can get your shit in one sock, and you want to begin to feel that Grinch moment when he hears the Who people sing. Is the Grinch actually a guy or a woman? I'm not exactly sure, but anyway, behaves a lot like a woman.
I mean, it was played by Jim Carrey, so I guess a guy.
So, kind
of. My wife is the only person I know that hates Christmas. I could argue with female, too.
Thank you. Anyway, I don't think you can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that the Grinch is a guy. Anyway, but when the Grinch hears the Who people and his heart grows, those are the experiences that me and my cohort keep having as we bump into the civilian world and we encounter all the trauma that people deal with, and they never hear the shit that we talk about. They don't hear. They go to therapists who look at them and they give them the zombie cocktail, the same drugs that we get. They give them the zombie cocktail, and then they start with this. Well, how did that make you feel? How did that make you feel?
Yeah.
How did that? And they go down that self-licking ice cream cone trail, right? And then you have these dudes who roll up and say, "Yeah, you're never getting. Oh, and you need to stop drinking too. You know, because you'll be."
Yeah, I gotta tell you, I think that's probably the fastest way to me to leave a therapist's office is for them to tell me to stop drinking.
Yeah, but it's, let me tell you. But you talk to anybody who's dealt with PTSD. When you if you're going to do it, the simple truth is, if you deal with PTSD and you're a drinker or a drug user, you will be the first person in history to deal with it successfully because nobody else has. Now, I know you're a hard drinking dude, but that's the truth. And you may reject it and you may not like it, but you talk to anybody who's dealt with it and you're not now. You may say, well, I only drink this or that or whatever. Problem is, your drinking releases your fucking gorillas from your fucking cage.
I won't argue that one bit. I guess what I mean when I say this is twofold. The first is that the idea, so I've gone to a therapist twice in my life. Once was a couples therapist, and that went really poorly. The other time was on my own accord, and it didn't last very long. But I think that the reason why I didn't take to it well, and by the way, anybody who goes to therapy and it benefits them, I really support that. I didn't have a good experience.
No, you know, let me just say this. It depends a lot on, it takes two to do the tango. And
agreed.
Right?
And it depends on your relationship with the therapist.
And you need somebody.
The intent seemed to be to fix me.
No.
You know? And the problem I had with it, and you know, when I went in and he was like, well, you know, some really important things you got to do right off the bat. You got to quit drinking. You know, maybe you can start eating a little bit better and exercising. I exercise every day. But you know, he gave me this laundry list of things that I could go do to reinvent myself as a well person.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And the problem I had with it was, I don't really have much interest in being a well person. You know, I understand, I've embraced the fact to a certain extent that I'm a broken guy.
That's
in all honesty, I think that I leverage some of the ways I'm broken in important ways. You know, for my work especially, whenever I'm talking about these types of issues, and it's important that I point out, I'm not a combat veteran. I did not see direct fire operations. So I don't want to portray myself as a PTSD guy. I'm just a guy that was wired wrong. You know, I've had some bad things happen to me in my life. I've seen some pretty bad stuff. And as a result, you know, sometimes I have trouble. But when I write about it, when I talk about it with other veterans, I'm talking from experience. I'm talking from that place where I've been in the basement drinking too much, knowing I was making the wrong choice. You know? And honestly, I like having it in my back pocket. I like knowing that, yeah, you know what? If next Sunday I'm in a real bad place, my wife and my kid are asleep, everything's okay in the house, and I'm in a dark place and I'm going to drink a quarter of a bottle of scotch and I'm going to go to bed and feeling like shit, it doesn't mean that I lost. It doesn't mean that I failed. It just means that that's what I did that day. And that's an important thing to me.
Well, here's what I would tell you. If you can do that and you can keep it self-contained like that, then I would say, one, you're an anomaly. Two, if you can do that and that is part of the way that you release steam, then so be it. Okay?
But yeah, I think that's an important thing to point out, is that it has to be the exception, it can't be the rule, right? And that is fair. That's an important thing. And I'm certainly not saying that, like, I've got some methodology unlocked that I'm just doing great. But what I am saying is sometimes it's okay to embrace the demons, I guess, is what I'm really trying to get at. Because let's try to go through life knowing something's wrong, knowing that we're upset, and trying to avoid engaging with it because it's going to ruin our day. You know? Like, every once in a while, something will trudge up an old memory, you know what I mean? And then for like 10 minutes, you're like, oh, shit, I had forgotten. I hadn't thought about that in a while. And you can feel yourself starting to kind of cascade down into a bad place. So what do? You focus on other things. You get to work. You focus on putting yourself in a positive mindset. And that's a good thing to do.
Right.
But you can't spend your whole life avoiding it.
No.
Sometimes you got to just nut up and go, tonight, I'm going to be in a bad place. I'm going to give myself tonight to be in a bad place. Tomorrow, I got to get back to work.
But well, here's what I would tell you. Here's what I would tell you. And I'm going to send you a picture of a slide that I made over the weekend. And I went PowerPoint slide bitch. And the slide is called The Mental Health Path of a Warrior. Right? So it starts with entry level training, right? And in entry level training, I don't think I hope they teach now. They didn't teach it very well before. Why you keep your honor clean, and you and I have talked about that. You keep your honor clean for you because you got to put your head on your pillow for the rest of your life. And if you dirty it up, yeah, the Marine Corps is going to get embarrassed, but you're going to live a life sentence with that shit. Okay, so you keep your honor clean for you. And then we go through other professional schools, and then what we ought to learn as we stay in the military and we become professionals is that your body's going to get dinged up in this physical profession, right? And your brain, your mental health's going to get dinged up too. We expect you to maintain both of them. It is not one, you will not get one look sideways should you go to mental health. It's like going to the library, it's like going to the gym. So you learn that as you become more senior and you stay around and you transition out. Now in theory they give us great, you know, living advice and things like that in transition. In practice, not so much. Okay, so I think there's two pieces missing. A significant piece is and I know this is gonna sound, you know, way too unmasculine for a lot of people, but there's wellness practice training. Hey, and it needs to be done by guys like my gunner. Hey, man, you're changed, okay? You've been changed over the course of your service, things you've seen, things you've done, and you got some shit rolling around. We want to talk about that shit. We want to talk about recognizing it. We want to talk about things that stress you, personal, financial, relationship. And then we want to talk about you developing best practices, and we can help you a little bit, but you're going to have to do it in terms of when these things happen, what do I do? Do I go to the gym? Do I go for a run? Do I meditate? Do I listen to music? What do I do that keeps my day on the beaten path and doesn't send me into the bushes, right? So I'm not doing the big movements every day. We don't get taught that shit. We don't get taught. And again, if you look at it as training, I got trained to call an aircraft, right? I got trained to attack a fortified position. And I learned how to do that shit. It's not beyond me. You're dealing with a population that's more driven, that is braver, that is tougher, that is as smart than any segment of our population, right? And now you're going to tell me that those people can't do this? Bullshit. I don't.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
90% of us don't need your zombie cocktail, and we probably don't need to go to group therapy. We do need to reconnect with our probably 5 or 6 battle buddies and make sure we stay tied in with them because they know whose fart that is in a room. Okay, they don't need anybody to say, "Hey, I own that." They know because we've lived like that. And so...
Now, I can tie that to a direct experience. The first time I was ever put in charge of Marines, I was a Lance Corporal. I was a brand new Lance Corporal. And I was promoted to being in charge of the shop that I had been a PFC in, which was difficult. It was a difficult position to be in. And a week after that, one of my guys hung himself. And I'll be honest, within my shop, it was like the worst kind of earthquake, you know? Me and two of the other guys were the ones that found him. It was a whole big thing. My guys all went and got mental health immediately, because me and the staff sergeant who was in charge of the shop were like, everybody needs to speak to the counselor. Everybody needs to engage with this directly. He and I, on the other hand, were the ones that said, well, the work still needs to get done while all of our guys are gone.
Right.
So we worked day and night for 3 weeks, and I didn't have time to be upset.
Right.
And the whole time I convinced myself it's because I was tough. You know? I was fine. I had a mission to accomplish, and I was going to accomplish it. And, you know, I talked to Paul. He's out now. He's an awesome guy. Staff Sergeant Fernandez at the time. We talked about it even at the time, joking around a little bit, like, oh, well, we'll pay for this later, you know, as we were still working past midnight every night trying to get done with things. And my wife, God bless her, every night I would come home, the nights I did come home during that period of time, and, you know, it'd be the middle of the night, there'd be dinner in the microwave, she'd wake up and come out and sit with me for a few minutes, and she'd go to bed, and then I'd be alone for the few hours I had until I needed to go back to work, in which sometimes I slept, right? And I went like that for a while, thinking that I was kicking ass. You know, I thought I was doing a great job until, like, maybe 4 months went by. And my ability to cope, I think I had just kind of used it up.
Right.
You know, I had a certain amount of bandwidth that I could function with. I spoke at the Marine's funeral. I don't want to mention his name, just, you know,
right.
It's weird to speak about him in this regard. But, you know, I went and spoke at his funeral. I really felt as though I had coped the way that I would cope, which was through work, which tends to be what I do when I'm upset. And then, like, 6 months down the road, middle of the night, I woke up. I had been having a dream about him, you know, like a movie, cold sweat, hands shaking, freaking out. I'm actually, my hands are a little shaky now thinking about it, you know? I got out of bed, and I went down to the garage, and I sat in the garage, and I drank. And I know that that's not the right thing to do. You know, especially because that was a really long and a very difficult night for me. But I do look back at it as an important turning point for me regarding that circumstance. And that is, it was the first time that I was willing to accept that I wasn't okay.
No. You know? Hey, can I tell you, the path to this stuff, it's not like going into Nordstrom's. It's not like there's marble and brass everywhere, right? It's a crooked path, right? It's got junk on it. You got to throw junk out of the way. It's got holes in it. I mean, so there is no perfect solution. I mean, it's human beings. And so it's interesting, Alex. When my gunny gave me that advice, you'll never get over this, he walked up to me, and actually I was wiping blood off myself, right? I'm sitting on two ammunition crates, and it'd been the first time I had stopped all day, and I noticed that I had blood on my hands and my forearms. And the
first time that you stop after something bad happens,
right? And he said,
is the most difficult.
Yeah, he walks up and he looks at me and he says, "Hey, Skipper," he said, "how you doing?" And the way he said it was, "How are you doing?" He said it like that, right? Not how you doing, not how you doing. Oh, I'm fine. He said, "How are you doing?" And I looked at him and I said, "You know, I haven't really almost the same exact response that you lived." You know, one of the cool things about being in charge is I haven't even thought about that. And I've been busy.
Yeah.
You know, other people are struggling right now. And in addition, you know, this is now a crime scene. We have to set security on it, make sure it's not disturbed, so that the
coroner. I just forget to call in Cadence in a run.
Right.
I can run further, harder, calling Cadence for a platoon than I can by myself.
Right. Right. And so,
not focused on yourself.
And I said, I don't know. And then that's the point when he looked at me and said, "You know, you're never going to get over this." And so it's the same. I don't want to call it compensation, but as a leader, you know, you're consistently. Where do we go when chow gets served? We go to the back of the line. Other people come before us, and I think that's the way we approach. That's the way we approach life in general. But at some point, you do have to reconcile yourself to it. You do have to reconcile yourself to it.
You know, and the same is true for a rape victim.
Right.
Or, you know, someone who witnesses a terrible crime. We tend to prize our ability to cope. Right? In our society, we're like, that person's strong. Look what they overcame. We value overcoming obstacles. But what we tend not to, you know, this kind of speaks to the military in a greater way as well, but, you know, we value the things that we overcame, but we don't value the process of overcoming it. You know, that's the part we hide. And because we hide it, it makes other people think that you must have done it easily. You know? And we kind of want people to think that we did. We want people to think that we're so strong that when that terrible thing happened, I just kept on keeping on. You know? But the problem with conveying that image across the board is that deep down inside, when something bad happens, we all hurt. But when like I said, that isolating feeling, you know, you're all alone inside your hurt. And you look at other people who seem to have just kept on keeping on. To my Marines, this is a major failing I had the first time I was leading Marines, is I never let them know how bad off I was.
Right.
Because I didn't let me know how bad off I was.
Right.
You know, we ended up losing another Marine to a MedSep just because he was having trouble coping with the situation. And I genuinely think, had I come into that shop and been open and honest and been like, guys, I'm up late too, you know?
Yeah, but you have, that's a learned, this, what happened to me in 1993, right? I don't know that I could have done it. But when I went to Iraq in 2004, I could spot it and I could do it. And I would have conversations. I remember a chaplain walking up to me and saying, "Are you Major McNamara?" And I put my hand over my name tape and I said, "Why, does he owe you money or something?" And chaplain. And he said, "No, are you the one that tells Marines that they'll never get over this?" And I said, "Yeah, you got a problem with that?" not that I was trying to be a dick to the chaplain. But I certainly wasn't afraid to go there. You want to know why? Because I knew it was true. I'd lived it. And I remember when that shit used to reach out and grab me, and I'd feel tears in my eyes thinking about it, and whatever the trigger would have been, sometimes it was, you know, it was aviation fuel, the smell of it. Sometimes it was the wop, 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 wop of a Huey aircraft. And the movie starts, right? I had lived that shit. I called one of those kids' dads 9 years later and introduced myself. And I said, "Do you want to know how your son died?" And he said, "Oh, were you in a squadron, blah, 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 blah. Were you at the memorial service? Did I meet you?" I said, "No, I've never met you." I said, "I was on the ground when your son's helicopter crashed." And with that, he was like, "Oh, my God." His name's Primo Bazzarini. He lived in Connecticut. His son, Peter, was killed. Sergeant, when a pilot was flying 7 feet off the ground up a canyon, and the blade hit the rotor hit the side of the canyon wall, nose went down, and he didn't have enough room to save it, and all four of them were killed. Two immediately, right? One decapitated, one crushed to death, and then trying to save his son and another corporal, and, you know, that whole thing. But I had lived it. And so that's why I had the chip on my shoulder when the chaplain, like, "Chaplain, what are you going to tell me?" Right? And then my experience with my sister, "What are you going to tell me? You can't, God doesn't give you more than you can handle." That's bullshit. And so, and then also I was armed with, if you've never read a book called When Bad Things Happen to Good People, put that on your list of things to read. It's written written by a Jewish rabbi who says that shit to people, right? Then his son gets that disease where you age like 20 years every year. And he dies at the age of 13 after contracting it at the age of 9 as an old man. And he just gets furious. Like my son didn't do anything to anybody. He was the most gentle, beautiful thing on the planet. Why would a loving, benevolent God do this? The answer, God didn't do that. You're a human being subject to the human condition. And God's not up there with a spreadsheet, you know, giving you warts and zits and shit like that. He's not getting your car keyed in the parking lot, right?
And he's not going to help you win the football game.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's not how it works.
As hard as you might pray. But, you know, we have that in our heads that why would God do this to me? And so armed with all that, when the chaplain said to me, you know, are you the one that says that? Yeah, I not only said it, I've lived it, and I know it to be true. And I said, why? And he said, do you mind if I use that? And I said, no, as long as you footnote it. Gunnery Sergeant Lance Y, United States Marine Corps, from Vietnam veterans who told him that. It's the hand-me-down oral tradition of mental health in the Marine Corps, like Jeremiah Workman saying, hey, a veteran told me, Jeremiah, don't let the monkeys out of the cage. What does that mean? It means stuff that shit in the closet and don't go near the door, right? Stay away from it. Stay away from the VFW, stay away from the Legion, and especially don't go in there and start drinking. Because the monkeys, and they're not really monkeys, they're gorillas on steroids, right? Those fuckers get out, and they not only shit stomp your life, but they shit stomp the people's lives that you love. Don't do that. And so, I mean, all that was pregnant in me when the chaplain says that. And he disarmed me when he said, I've started to tell Marines that. I said, and the important part, chaplain, is you can learn to coexist with it. And that's what we need to teach. And we're not talking about that.
You know, and it's important to know, like, speaking of when you're talking about your experiences from having that horrible thing happen and then a few years later serving in a combat zone, you know, in my shop, which, you know, we called them shops, but there were sections within a greater shop, there were probably 100 Marines total working there. And in the years since, 5 of them have committed suicide. And every time it happens, you know, we all do the same thing, the Facebook circle, you know, where checking on each other, making sure everybody's okay, filling each other in, and then for a couple of weeks after that, everybody's checking on each other extra, right? You know what I mean? You're checking on your teammates, your old squad mates. The thing is that it doesn't get easier, you know, whether it's one kind of traumatic experience or another. The traumatic experience isn't lessened by you having had the experience with it before. But what can be lessened is how hard it hurts you, how much it hurts you in the meantime. Because what you'll learn is it's not just about learning to develop coping mechanisms, but it's about learning to engage with your coping mechanisms, to allow yourself to admit you need to engage with your coping mechanisms, which could be talking with your friends. It might be playing World of Warcraft, like my little brother does. You know, it could be, I think that a lot of people can probably relate to this. If you're in a real tough place, sometimes you can't talk to your wife about it because you don't want to share it with her.
Right.
Because then she's going to carry it too. So you've got to find something that you can do that lets yourself hurt. But you got to let yourself hurt.
But you know what? I would submit to you that maybe within your shop there was 3 guys who hung out together all the time. And they don't – what they need to do is reconnect because – and I do it almost every day with 5 friends that I was in Afghanistan with. We have this text thing that we do. It's like all 5 of us in there, and we do it every day, and we've been doing it for years now. And when somebody doesn't come on the net after a few days, it's like, hey, yo, why are you in River City? Oh, I got this going on, I got this going on, I got this going on. You all right? I'm hurting. You know, but it's based on your own tightness, not that we were in the same unit. Does that make sense? It's a natural.
No, it's totally true.
And so to me, those are the guys you need to reconnect with. And not going to be very many of them. But it's that connection to me that provides overwatch for each other. But it's a natural connection. It's not a chain of command connection or anything like that. It's just natural connection.
No, that you want to do. Paul, the staff sergeant that I worked with out there, you know, he ended up becoming a gunny and getting out. I got out a few years after him. He and I worked together for a year, maybe, the whole time that I was in the Marine Corps. But he's one of those guys that I call, you know. Joe Wolf, I'll give Joe Wolf credit for this right now. He called me the other day. You know, this last month, a couple of months have been stressful for me. You know, I lost my dad. I got diagnosed with Lyme disease. I've been working a lot. You know, and I think that he just reached out to me to be like, hey, man, I know you're having a tough time right now. I'm just checking to see what kind. You know, are you having like I'm stressed out, so, you know, I want to play some extra Madden tonight, tough time, or are you in a bad place? And I was like, dude, I'm good. I'm stressed out, but I'm going to play some extra Madden tonight, kind of tough time. And he was like, good, just checking, you know, because he knows me.
Right.
And you're 100% right. It's got nothing to do with the chain of command.
Right.
We didn't even work in the same shop, you know, but he knows
me. Right.
You know, although I will credit, I want to give credit to a guy named Weston Scott. Marines might be familiar with him because he's done a lot of media stuff. He works for We Are the Mighty, which is another military-centric news organization. The other day, he reached out to me on Facebook. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was up working. And he was just like, hey, man, you okay? And I said, yeah, why would you ask? And he's like, you know, if I've got Marine friends on my Facebook list and I go on and I see them still online at 2 a.m.,
There you go. What are you doing?
That's awesome.
Why is your dumb ass up right now?
Exactly. What are you doing up right now? If you're drinking, it better be for good reason.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But that's what I'm talking about. When you, and again, I know it's not like, for instance, when you hear, you got to stop drinking, right? That's like so un-Marine-like, right? But if I don't say that, right, and it may wind up for you that, okay, I need to be careful about my drinking, and I need to. And if that's what it is for you, that's fine. Do not allow the gorillas to stomp your life and destroy your life. And if alcohol is, if alcohol knows the combination to the cipher lock, then you have to mitigate that. But what we're really talking about now is wellness practices that we put into, and one of them is staying connected, right? And we say staying connected. Well, what does that mean? Well, you got to figure that out. But we don't get any training in that stuff, right? Two is let's talk about your drinking, all right? We're all big boys, right? We join the Marine Corps. Why? Because we want to drink and fight and chase chicks. And the women, they join because they want to drink and fight and chase dudes. Okay, so
that justifies some stupid tattoos. That's
right,
on the list.
Right, and exactly, and get tatted up. Okay, so that's who we are, right? Big shocker that the most binge drinkers and the most unprotected sex come out of the Marine Corps. No, who would be surprised by that? That's the group we recruit. Okay, it's a group that
it's a recruiting. As far as I was concerned, it was a recruiting tactic.
Absolutely.
But that's the branch I want to join.
Yeah, exactly. And so,
you know,
and so for us not to look at that group and say, let's talk about drinking. Come on, we're stupid. Okay, because now you're going to go, we're going to release you from this thing, and you're going to go back, and we want you to understand some of the practices that you need to have that when this stuff begins to build up, you know how to release it, so you get to live. You live the life you want to live. All right.
That's awesome. Because the problem I have with going to a therapist and having them to say stop drinking is it's kind of like teaching abstinence in high school.
Right.
You know, I'm sure that it would be the best thing.
Ain't happening.
You know, but it's not going to happen. You know, because if I'm already, and I'm not going to use me as an example here because I don't think that this speaks to me particularly. But let's say a guy who's struggling with PTSD. They're going to seek treatment, you know, and he's hanging out with his friends and he's staying connected, but he feels isolated. He feels alone. And then his therapist goes, well, what you gotta do is you gotta stop drinking. So he stops drinking and then goes and hangs out with his friends as the sober guy, isolated in the group of partying, still in his head, still feeling bad, and not making forward progress towards engaging. You know, and so I guess for me, I say responsible drinking is important. But if you're a drinker, if your friends are drinkers, and you can do it healthy, drink with your friends. Have a beer with your buddies is okay. Have a beer by yourself, in my opinion, is okay too.
But I would tell you this, I'm not a drinker, and I'm the coolest guy and the funnest guy in the room. And if
we all aren't that guy.
No, I know. Trust me, I know. I've hung out with you guys. But you can do it. You can still look. You can be just as fun sober as maybe.
Oh, I agree.
Maybe you won't be as stupid. And guess what? They'll accept you because you know what they like. They like you.
I'm talking about how you feel inside.
But let me just tell you what I think is important. The messaging, the guy who brings that message to you. I mean, I had served with Lance Y before. He was a stud. And he was a good fucking dude, too. So I couldn't turn my back on his advice, right? I couldn't. Because of who he was. The same, somebody else, some dink psychiatrist, Navy psychiatrist, could have walked up and said that to me, And I said, get the fuck out.
Anymore.
Yeah, get the fuck. So to me, the messaging is so important. That's why, in my opinion, the VA, you shouldn't be allowed to be a therapist unless you're a veteran and preferably a combat veteran. If you're going to talk to people about PTSD, because they walk in and, you know, they're home. This is my culture. This is my tribe. This guy's been there. He's done that.
When you walk in and talk to a civilian therapist, and there's nothing, I love, you know, they're great people. I appreciate that they devote their lives to helping people.
I'm with you.
But you have to walk in and first you have to give them the framework for your story, because they don't understand at all who you are or where you're coming from. Whereas if you're talking to another guy who's been through it, you walk in and you go, here are the wickets of my story.
Right.
Because you already understand the framework. I don't have to build a world for you. You know?
When I went in to see my first therapist at the VA, I went to a vet center, which is really cool and a product of the Vietnam guys. So if you're a Vietnam dude out there, thank you very much for doing that. But it was in San Clemente. And by the luck of God, out walks a guy named Robert McIntyre. And Vietnam veteran, infantry NSF guy, infantry guy. And so he takes me back into his office. We walk into his office, and here's all his I Love Me shit, right? And I'm like, I've been in this office. And then about an hour into it, he says, hey, let me stop for a second. Can I tell you something? And I said, yeah. He said, you're fucked up and we haven't even got to your combat shit yet. And I started laughing. He goes, but hey, it'll be all right. I'm glad you came in today. Right? It's the first step. But I was home, right? Culturally, I was home and I was safe. And you can't
needed to disarm you.
You can't go. I don't think you can go there. Maybe, you know, you can't. Maybe a few people can. But I would say, by and large, you can't take somebody there if you haven't been there and you don't have an I Love Me wall. You know, it doesn't work. It's not us. And so
I really think it's true, man. You know, because when you're, let's say you're Mike McNamara and you go to a civilian therapist to talk about some shit that's happened, right? This really nice old lady who's going to sit across from you and speak in a soothing voice, and you cannot help, at least if you're anything like me, you can't help but censor yourself. You know, I don't want to meet this lovely old woman and put my heaviest, darkest problems on her. I don't know this lady. I don't know that she has a frame of reference to appreciate it. You know,
right?
Like,
right.
So,
as opposed to
develop a rapport over a year.
Yeah, as opposed to me with Bob McFarlane, him telling me something, and me going fuck that.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. You know, like it's disarming because you know that you're not being judged, and I'm not saying that other therapists will judge you. Of course not. But it's hard to turn off those human social defenses that we have. You know. Whereas when it's you and a guy who gets it, you're just talking about something you know he gets.
You're just having a conversation.
But when it's you and a guy who doesn't get it, you know what I mean?
Right. No, first of all, it's outside of our tribe, and those flags go up immediately. Whoop, 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 whoop. Non-tribal member, non-tribal member, non-tribal member. And now he's going to try to go into the sacred land and the sacred stand on the sacred ground of the tribe. Right? And every fiber of your body is saying, this ain't right. But I'll give it a try. And then all of a sudden he hits a magic button and you're like, fuck this. And you're nice.
Yeah.
And then you leave and you never go back. That's all right.
And that is exactly what happens.
That's
my one troubled experience with couples counseling. When my wife and I were going through a tough time, so we were like, well, you know what? We're committed to being married. We made a promise. You know, let's do everything that we can. And I'm proud to say that we did stay together through no benefit of this fucking therapist. But, you know, let's do everything that we can to make sure that we give ourselves a fair shake as a couple. You know, we don't take this commitment lightly. So we went to this therapist who was a civilian couples counselor. I was on active duty at the time, but we were at an INI station, so we were far away from, like, a big duty station. And, you know, we went, I think, to three sessions. And throughout, I was on crutches at the time because I had just had another knee surgery. I think it was shortly after a deployment to Africa, and it was a torn ACL. It wasn't a big deal. you know, and but he asked me about my history of injuries, and it's an expensive one. You know, I've got a lot of injuries. I've been a fighter, a rugby player, a football player, a Marine, you know. And so he painted this picture of me as like a thrill seeker, as like an adrenaline junkie, which I suppose there's an argument to be made for that. But he was explaining to both of us that the root of the problem in our marriage is that I'm a masochist. And I do it physically and I do it emotionally. I just like trauma, which couldn't be further from the truth. I don't pursue getting hurt. I've just gotten hurt in the course of my activities, you know? So my wife and I, neither of us really bought his diagnosis, I guess.
Right.
So we just stopped going. You know, we didn't go back. He called my command and told my command that he thought that I was a risk, or I was a danger to myself and others because I had demonstrated masochistic behavior in pursuing these injuries. And fortunately for me, I had a good command who spoke to him at length to make sure that there wasn't a problem and then laughed off his diagnosis as utterly ridiculous because he lacked any understanding of what it was that we were. You know, I had just torn my ACL because I stepped on a rock wrong on a patrol and fell down and tore my ACL. I didn't even address it until we got back to the States and I went and got an MRI and was like, yeah, I knew something was wrong. I had a brace on it for the last couple of weeks and I had surgery to fix it. That's just a normal thing to the type of person who has a physical job. But to this guy who had no frame of reference, he was like, well, look at this dude. He's on crutches again. That's the problem. Now, he sucked. I would argue most therapists don't suck. But it speaks to that needing a frame of reference to speak from. Otherwise...
Let me ask you this, Alex. My guest, Alex Hollings. He from NewsRep. Right? Used to be SoftRep, now it's NewsRep, in case you don't know. He's a senior writer there. Are you still a senior writer, or you get promoted?
I am.
Yeah. All right. So you go there, and you're talking about that stuff, right? And somebody who can't really participate in that discussion is your therapist. If you could go through this thing that I discussed, like this discussion about wellness practices and the things you need to create for yours, the training that you need to learn how to develop these practices in your personal life. Okay. What percentage of Marines do you think need that? Even PTSD guys, as opposed to the zombie cocktail and group therapy and psychiatric therapy at the VA. 90-10?
I think that everybody... Well, I mean, the thing that people don't understand is that you don't necessarily need to see something terrible to have a need to develop good, strong, emotional coping mechanisms.
Right.
You know? Just, for instance, like, let's say you're a cook. Let's say you're a disperser. You know? Your workload at 18 years old is still going to be far, far more than your average 18-year-old's workload. It's your first time away from home, and all of a sudden you've got to work for 30 hours a day sometimes just to make sure you get everybody fed or everybody paid or what have you. And if you don't have good coping mechanisms at that point in your life, as a young man or a young woman, you're going to turn to bad coping mechanisms. You're going to drink a lot. You're going to turn to drugs. You're going to self-medicate in ways that aren't good for you because those are the popular and the easy coping mechanisms. And you've never really faced this kind of adversity before. It's a unique form of adversity to be a non-combat guy working 20 hours a day, right?
Right.
So what do? You drink a lot. You play video games with your friends and you do dumb stuff, but you never develop emotionally mature methods of dealing with your stress. And I'm not saying that guy is necessarily going to go commit suicide or he's going to be drinking alone in his basement or what have you, but his life is going to be a lot harder if right from the get-go, at the birth of his life as an adult, the way that he deals with his problems is drinking them away, or is doing drugs, or is, you know, going and finding a random girl to sleep with at the bar, if that's the way you're born into adulthood, it's not going to get easier from there.
Let me read you, let me read you an email. Mac, you two are making a pretty solid case for the most credible people in a unit being in charge of teaching regular modules of this kind of coping behavior. I think it ought to be done on active duty as well as this transition thing you talk about. It shouldn't be something that we pick up after we separate from the military, then we struggle, and then we start looking for things that the VA won't provide, and then we find alternate providers like Semper Max, and then in parentheses, Tim Maxwell's Farms, like Boulder Crest Retreats, and the others who provide this kind of stuff. It would seem to me, and Alex is making the point, I think, right now, in parentheses, as I listen, that these are lifelong skills that a professional that works in a pretty intense environment on a regular basis ought to have and certainly ought to be developing. And you guys are both spot on in terms of who brings that message. If the dork teaches a class, then the class is going to be blown off. If the sergeant major and the most credible warfighters in the unit teach that class, then I'll bet you everything that I own that Marines are sitting in there paying attention, taking notes.
You know, I especially agree with the end of that. You know, the Marines that I look back to respecting the most that I worked with the exception of one chief warrant officer who was admin and MSG before she became a chief warrant officer, were a first sergeant, a sergeant major, and a master sergeant, all out of the infantry MOSs. And, I mean, those guys could call me today with advice or guidance that I would take to heart, having not spoken to them in years, you know? I think there's a lot of truth to that. To the weight that it carries when that guy who walks in the room that you know that guy has seen worse than you, he's been in worse days, he's seen worse things, and when he comes in, if that man walks into the room and says, hey guys, I hurt, okay for you to hurt, here's some things that we can do when we hurt, I'm going to pay attention to that guy. I think that's 100% true. You know, however, if we have a Marine Corps, headquarters Marine Corps mandated PowerPoint presentation given to us by our most junior Lance Corporal because someone has to read it out loud, it's going to be just like all of our suicide prevention training.
Right. No.
You know, we had a suicide prevention training course a week before my first Marine killed himself. And I'd argue the one thing that course taught him better than anything was how to make sure that we didn't see the identifying characteristics of someone who was ruminating about suicide. It made him adept at keeping the red flags away from us.
You know, and Bob Nielsen, who is kind of the patron saint of all Marine Radio, he said, you know, if the VA got involved in teaching that, those kind of skills, and you're making the same argument in terms of active duty stuff, they'll fuck it up in 20 minutes. It'll be terrible. So I don't know what the answer is, but the answer is not have, because what you're talking about is the most credible, the best, you know, teach this. Okay, now we're going to mandate it. Now it's going to get fucked up. Because what happens when they're not available to teach it? Well, it's goes to Sergeant so-and-so and Captain so-and-so. Well, nobody's good. Yeah, well, they're the only ones that can teach it. Well, it's going to suck then. And it's problematic.
The reason why we've had so much trouble stifling the suicide epidemic among active duty and veterans is that you take the best of intentions and you translate it into a Marine Corps order or a MAR admin. And it very quickly loses its luster, you know what I mean, and becomes a training requirement that we need to squeeze into an already overfilled, you know, especially let's say we're talking about training reservists, which is something that I did for a long time. You got 48 hours a month to try to get these guys caught up on everything. And the way that the Marine Corps works, a vast majority of the things you need to train them on are universal general training requirements, sexual harassment, EEO, suicide prevention, so on and so forth. So you take this guy who's supposed to have tobacco cessation training. You know, so you take this guy who's supposed to be an armorer. We get him for 48 hours. We spend 30 hours of it teaching him PowerPoint presentations. We give him 8 hours to sleep, and then we give him 4 hours in his shop, which is really spent just eating chow in between the other PowerPoint presentations he's got to go get. And then we just send them back out there, and then we stand them up for deployment, where they'll go spend 60 days getting all the same PowerPoint presentations before they head off into country.
And then we say he's...
On the active duty side, it's better, but it's still not much better.
Not better. He's much... You just have more time to do it. More time to eat chow, and more time to PT. And then we say, hey, he's good to go.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and then when you come back from a deployment, we have you sit down with a counselor for 40 seconds where they ask you 3 canned questions. You're thinking about hurting yourself, or you're thinking about hurting anyone you love. How do you feel? And you say, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. And they go, okay, great. Check in the box and send you on your way.
Is that all, Doc? Is that right? Is that all, Doc? That's it. All right, later. Let's go to chow, boys.
And that's that.
I told you it wasn't going to take me long. That's it.
You know, when I was getting out of the Marine Corps, first Sergeant, again, bringing it back to those few senior enlisted leaders that I really admired, I was getting out of the Marine Corps. I scheduled a knee surgery for my terminal leave because I was like, my knees were going to be screwed up whether I was in the Marine Corps or not. It just happened to get screwed up in the Marine Corps, right? And it was First Sergeant Owens who tanked my terminal leave, put me on med hold, and was like, forget that. The Marine Corps is taking care of you. And in my head, I was like, I'm not a combat veteran. I'm a guy that's run around carrying. When I deployed, I worked security. My job was to look scary. You know, like I pointed a rifle at someone twice. You know, and so as far as I was concerned, I didn't rake. I was like, I'm not going to go through that. And he was like, you did that while you're on the clock for the Marine Corps. The Marine Corps is going to take care of you. Thanks to him, I was in the Marine Corps for an extra year. I left with a VA disability rating for my knees. Because First Sergeant Owens, who was that guy, who was that combat veteran that I admired, was like, you're hurt and you need to get fixed. It isn't different for emotional injuries, it's just less visible. It's harder for the First Sergeant to walk down the hall and spot you. But the mentality is the same. You know, you gotta let yourself get taken care of. And again, I really think if those war fighters that you admire are the ones telling you, it makes it a lot easier for you. You know?
Hey, can I tell you a funny story about somebody pointing a rifle at somebody?
Yeah, I'm always down for one of those.
So I think it was during, we had big fires at Pendleton a few years ago, and I was working current ops for the MEF, and I wind up being there overnight, right, as the MEF senior watch officer. So I'm running their operations center, the fire's getting fought, you know, principally during the day, right? I'm babysitting at night, and the power was going to go out, and there was 2 Marines from the camp guard that were supposed to come over, you know, so the power, it's like a scheduled power outage, blah, 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 blah. So I call over to, and it happens, I go outside, there's nobody from the camp guard there. I come back inside, I call over, I said, hey, make sure you send your guys. And like, yes, sir, they're on their way. So they're outside but I didn't know if they'd arrived, so I walk outside to see. I come out the front door, one of them turns and points his rifle at me and yells, halt, who goes there? And I said, put that motherfucking rifle down right now or I'm going to fucking kill you.
Which is the appropriate response.
Which, and what does he do? He does it. And he says, sorry, sir. I said, the fuck are you doing? And he was like, ugh. I said, okay, hold on. How long have you been in the Marine Corps? 7.5 months. And I said, okay, and you're in charge. How long have you been in the Marine Corps? 9 months, sir. Okay, I said, okay, you two buttheads, listen to me. You work for me now. Don't point that rifle at anybody unless you're going to kill them. Okay, and walking through a door doesn't constitute getting ready to kill somebody. Got it? Yes, sir. Sorry about that, sir. Not a problem. That stays between you and me. All right? You supervise him, okay, because he's clearly a loose cannon. Okay, so now they laugh. I say, okay, you know what your orders are, right? This secure place got top secret shit inside of it. Anybody who's milling about or wants access, call me. Use that phone. Dial this number. I'll be over there. Yes, sir. Awesome. awesome, awesome.
The only time I ever had a Marine point a rifle at me was at the rifle range when I was a range coach. And let me tell you, if you want to get kicked in the chest, that is the fastest way to get kicked in the chest. The poor guy, I won't say his name.
Did he do it on purpose?
No, he was just a real bad shooter and a real frustrated bad shooter. And then he flagged our captain, our adjutant, with his rifle. So I grabbed the muzzle of his rifle and pointed it at the dirt, brought him aside, and I was like, I'll say his nickname. His nickname was Karate Chop for another reason. But I was like, listen, brother, I'm going to throw you off the range if you make a dumb mistake like that again. I ought to throw you off the range right now. You know, before Captain Braun's a real good guy. I think he's Major Braun now. He's a really, really nice dude. And he was like, it's this kid's first time rifle calling in the fleet. Get him back on the line, see what he can do, you know? 10 minutes later, he flags me, asking for help. So then I grabbed his rifle and stomped him in the chest, too, and that was, and he on the range. You know, I will say, from what I've heard, because I ended up talking to his platoon sergeant at his next duty station, from what I heard, you know, he ended up being pretty squared away. I think he got out as a corporal.
That's funny. No, you know what? And let me tell you. It didn't even occur to me that he might shoot me, right? I was pissed that he would.
Yeah.
I was pissed that he would point his rifle. And I later told that story to my friends, and they said, Mac, he could have shot you. I'm like, no, he couldn't have. He was stupid. He not shooting me.
Lord knows he may not have five rounds in his rifle, depending on where he was working post. I think that I stood, I cannot tell you how many posts I stood stateside with a rifle without a magazine inserted.
That's so stupid. Like, that's the stupidest shit in the world.
As I was getting out, they were arming barracks duty without ammunition, but you had to carry a rifle or a sidearm.
Yeah.
It made zero sense whatsoever.
Well, you're going to menace somebody into behaving correctly. My guest for the last hour has been Alex Hollings. We didn't really talk about anything that he's written, so let's talk about a few of the things that you have written before I let you go. Talk to me about some things you've written and why.
Well, one thing that's definitely worth keeping an eye on is how Syria is rapidly developing into not just potentially a proxy war, not just an internal civil war, but it's a clinic on Russian propaganda. And the thing that people should really look out for here in the next couple of weeks, you know, Bashar al-Assad's Syrian forces are getting ready for an offensive against Idlib, which is one of the few remaining rebel strongholds. And when we say rebel, it's kind of a mishmash of groups. Some are bad guys, some are good guys, but a lot of them have U.S. backing. They're
right.
The better guys, I suppose we could argue, right?
Yes.
They're Syrian Democratic Forces is what we tend to call them as a group, but they're not really that unified.
They're at least our guys, right?
They're at least our guys.
Yeah, they're the people that we tend to be backing right now, so.
You know, and some of them genuinely are the good guys, you know, some of them less so. But then amongst them are also a great deal of civilians, right?
Right.
So Russian air support is kind of leading the way in this Idlib offensive that's already begun. But way before the air support started, the disinformation campaign started, which has really been my focus. Russia has already started saying, there was a story in RT and a story in Sputnik over the last week, both Kremlin-owned news outlets, saying that the United States and the White Hats, which is also kind of a dubious group, depending on who you talk to, within Syria that volunteer to help pull people out of rubble, that both the U.S. and the White Hats are planning to stage a chemical attack against civilians in Syria to justify U.S. involvement in the conflict. The reason why that's such a big concern is that this is the same bullshit line that they started feeding us the last two times Assad used chemical weapons against civilians. So Russia has proof of theory now that they can plant the seed that there's a conspiracy at play before the attack takes place. Then once the attack takes place, they point back at those old stories and say, see, it wasn't Assad, it must have been America. America is doing this because they want to dethrone Assad. Don't be fooled. If America was really interested in going to war with Assad, they would have over the last two times they used chemical weapons. Instead, we did very limited strikes. But they're planting these seeds, not just in the media, but on social media,
right.
You know, in meme form at times. So keep an eye out. As this offensive kicks off, not only do we need to pay close attention because this has the potential to become a very real proxy war with Russia and Iran, but we need to be paying attention because this is a demonstration of how Russia engages in hybrid warfare. The tip of the spear for them now is information operations. And that's what we're seeing in the media this week. You're going to see a lot of statements from Russian officials talking about all the reasons why America is probably going to do something wrong soon. And they're doing it to pre-position themselves to justify committing war crimes, effectively. You know, so that's something that not only have I written about a lot in the last week, I'll be writing about it in the coming week, but it's also something that's worth keeping an eye on. When you look at the headlines, be aware that any time it's a statement coming from a Russian or a Syrian official, there's more motive behind it than just conveying what happened.
Well,
you know, and that's something that I think the mainstream media is not doing.
We
kind of
live by some simple rules. How do we know the Russians are lying?
Their lips are moving.
Thank
100%
you.
100% true.
Thank you.
Yeah. But it bothers me that the international media, the American media, tends not to take them to task on it. You know, we're so focused on viewing everything through the lens of whether or not you voted for Donald Trump, or viewing everything through the lens of whether or not it's on the right side or the wrong side of this week's hashtag battles, that we tend to lose sight of holding other nations accountable for their bullshit. You know, something that America used to be really good at. So if you're looking for a way to unify with your fellow Americans, regardless of politics, the way to do that is to look at how fucked up these other countries are.
Right?
America is an imperfect place,
but
we'll still take it.
Yeah. Let me tell you, the way you deliver that line is you do something my kids do, right? When you say but, you like lift one foot off the ground, you rotate your knee in front of your other knee, right, which cycles your one of your butt cheeks forward, and you point to your butt.
Exactly, and
you point
I'll take
to your butt.
The alternative.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's the move. I'll tell you what. I don't know if you saw it, but there's an article in the early bird this morning that talks about there was an attack in the eastern Ukraine, and what's the big Die Welt, the big publication in Germany?
Oh, I couldn't tell you offhand.
All right, Moscow called the high profile killing of a pro Russian separatist leader. What does this sound like in the Ukraine, in the breakaway Ukraine region of Donetsk, a provocation? What does that sound like? Does that sound like what happened in the Crimea?
Right? That's exactly what we're
That's
talking
exactly
about.
You know,
what
you're talking
Russia
about.
Russia is really good at portraying things. So this is the thing. You know, Russia could not afford an actual war with the United States or, God help them, NATO. They don't have the money for it. But what Russia is that little guy in the bar who's so quick to fight, or at least he says he's so quick to fight, that people always back down from him, you know? Because nobody wants it, you know, when you're over 30 and you're at the bar, you don't want to fight, you know what I mean? Like, I just want to have a couple of drinks and go home tonight, man.
Right.
But there's that guy who walks around with his chest puffed up, who's just looking for a reason to be offended, so that he can piss you out and die. That's what Russia is. They're not that formidable an opponent, but they have so much bluster, and they're so aggressive, that they get a lot done. They garner a lot of headlines. So Russia's not going to go to war with the United States over any perceived slight, but they're happy to say they will.
Right.
They're happy to threaten it because they know that to your average American, and this is an important thing to keep in mind, your average American still sees Russia as a very legitimate military threat thanks to media coverage of Russia's military. So we don't want a war with Russia. I mean, we shouldn't want one anyway. But the easiest way to make sure that a country is not going to go to war with someone is to convince all of the population that they shouldn't go to war with someone, because politicians are ultimately beholden to re-election. You know, we saw it in Vietnam, we saw it in Iraq, we even saw it to a certain extent with North Korea for a little while. The government, when they think we're going to have to take military action, they start priming the people to support the war, right? They have to, because the people have to support the war. But we are now in an era where, thanks to social media and outlets like RT and Sputnik, foreign governments can directly engage the American public and try to sway them the other way. You know, and so what we're seeing in Syria now is Russia actively trying to persuade the American public to believe that Russia is, or excuse me, that the United States is the bully, the aggressor in Syria, just as they were the bully in regarding North Korea. Because they're trying to convince Americans, who already are pretty torn up amongst themselves about whether or not they like our president, it's easy to convince someone who hates Donald Trump to hate any military action the United States takes under Donald Trump.
Hey, let me ask you this. Can you imagine how pleased they are, you know, with the disturbance that they've unleashed in American democracy? Can you imagine?
That's a really important point.
I don't know who got the Navy comm relative to the idea and the initial operation, but that dude needs to get his award upgraded to the highest award that we give in peacetime for contributions to the motherland, because in our wildest dreams, we could never imagine that the Americans would appoint a special prosecutor, that the special prosecutor would maraud right through their news cycle on a nightly basis, would maraud through the presidency, maraud through the president's friends, lawyers, and other people, and just throwing shit everywhere. We could never even in our best fantasy, that wasn't part of it. Well done, boys.
Because we tend to look at everything through the scope of a 4 or 8 year presidency, because those are our election cycles. Russia doesn't work that way. They do have election cycles, but Putin's in power as long as Putin wants to be in power. He has the benefit of playing the long game. You know, I wrote an article last week about how Russian trolls that are using the exact same tactics they used to meddle in the 2016 election to plant seeds of dissent within the vaccine and anti-vaccine crowds on social media. The same way they did between white nationalists and Black Lives Matter in Ferguson. The same way they've done over and over again, because the goal is not to get a certain guy elected. The goal has nothing to do with who's the president this year, because he won't be in 4 or 8 years. And the Russians know that. The goal is to weaken America's resolve, to make sure that Americans don't have faith in their government, don't have faith in their electoral process, and continue to focus inward with their aggression. You know, there was that Pew survey about how a lot of Republicans view Kim Jong-un in a more positive light than Nancy Pelosi.
Right.
That's insane.
Right.
We're talking about a politician with ideologies that we don't agree with, an American politician with ideologies we don't agree with, versus a dictator with hundreds of thousands of people in concentration camps. But we like him better than the other political party right now. This was Russia's real goal. Russia's continued goal is to sow discord within the United States so that we stay a disunited nation, so that we continue to fight with each other.
Disunited States?
This is the intent. You know, which is, as a matter of fact, an excellent time to plug my book that's coming out on September 10th called The Perception Wars, which you can find on Amazon. Please buy like 10 copies, get one for everyone in your family. You can mail them all to me. I'll sign them. I need the money. Come on, guys. Help me out.
When does it come out?
It'll be for sale on September 10th on Amazon. You can search The Perception Wars, or you can search Alex Hollings, or you can go to alexhollings.com, and I promise you it will be slathered all over it. I will make sure it's super easy to buy.
Email, hey, Mac, didn't Rocky take care of Ivan Drago in Rocky IV, therefore Russia has never been the same since?
Well, honestly, that's what ended the Cold War, right? It wasn't Glasnost. It was definitely Rocky IV, as far as I'm concerned. By the way, Rocky IV is still one of the best movies of all time.
Here's another one. Mac, I wondered, and it was a bit of a head-scratcher for me last week, why the president came out and made comments about Russia, Syria, and chemical weapons. Now it makes sense to me. Yeah, if you didn't catch, there was comments made by the Trump administration warning both Russia and Syria, don't do that.
You know, and there is a consensus within the international community outside of the scope of Russia and a few friendly nations to Russia. There's a general consensus that Bashar al-Assad has used chemical weapons repeatedly against his own people in this conflict. The general storyline from the Syrian government is that the rebels are using them themselves to garner international support. That doesn't make any sense because, I mean, they're losing. If you were losing, would you not use some of those chemical weapons against your enemy instead of continuing to kill yourself with them? Chances are good you might. It's important to note the location of these alleged chemical weapon attacks have been in rebel-held territory that were soon thereafter held by Assad's Syrian regime. In other words, they use it to capture territory that's proving too difficult or costly to capture through traditional means. You know, and we know Assad does it. The reason why it's really difficult for us to really squarely place the blame there is because when a chemical weapons attack happens, you need to get there within, like, let's say 48 hours to confirm what really occurred, gather evidence, determine, you know, culpability. This last time, Russian and Syrian forces stopped UN investigators from reaching it for a month. Then when they got there, after Russian forces had already occupied the territory for a while, and while Assad's forces were currently occupying it, the UN investigators didn't find any evidence that there was a Syrian chemical weapons attack, except for all of the dead people. Yeah. So there was no evidence to support an attack at all, except for the dead people, leading them to go, oh, there must not have been a chemical weapon attack at all. These guys all just started foaming at the mouth and dying for no reason, obviously.
Can't figure it out. Must have been the water.
And in the international media, we do a really bad job of following up on the story with the same fervor that we break it. The chemical weapon attack happens, we break that story. You know, Russia says we didn't do it, we break that story. 3 weeks later, 3 months later, we confirm with a high probability, we assert with a great deal of confidence that it was Russia. Nobody really covers that story because it's 3 months old now. It's not that interesting. So we tend not to take Russia, we tend not to hold them accountable for their lies because we're not paying attention by the time they're proven to be lies, you know? So keep an eye out for it. It's worked in the past. I see no reason why they're going to change directions. However, the fact that the Trump administration is already engaging that chemical weapon narrative, I see as promising because it means at least we're starting to act differently.
The NATO is, this is just an editorial comment, NATO's weakness, and specifically Germany's weakness, allows Russia, emboldens Russia to do what they do in Eastern Europe. And Germany needs to get its shit together. Talk about, I know you wrote something about our intel assets in Moscow. That story's been in the news. Tell us about our intelligence assets in Moscow and what's going on.
And this is part of a broader problem. We've lost almost all of our intelligence assets in China in recent years, and we now, according to the New York Times, which is troubling in and of itself because the New York Times has kind of a shady reputation for outing intelligence assets and the pursuit of a story. However, it seems that our intel assets have also gone quiet in Moscow. Now, in China, we know why. The Chinese government managed to infiltrate the secure server that we use to communicate with our intelligence assets. They literally got the list of names, followed those people to find the people that were handling them that weren't on the server, and killed all of them over the span of about 2 years, just recently.
Right.
So we've got very few eyes and ears left in Beijing. Now, in Moscow, since the 2016 election, this is one of those things that you've noticed, like in the UK, they're using very clearly Soviet nerve agents to kill or to attempt to kill Sergei Skripal, who was a former Russian military intelligence officer who defected to the UK, sold a bunch of Russian secrets. What that really was a part of a broader effort to do two things. Number one, root out any spies within Moscow. And number two, send some clear messages about what they will do to you and your family. Important to note that Skripal's daughter was with him when they used that nerve agent. What Russia will do to you and your family if you betray Mother Russia. So the assets that haven't been compromised and already dealt with in Moscow have all but gone quiet because right now they're in the midst of, like, you know, their version of a Red Scare. Counterintelligence is cracking down inside Moscow to make sure that there are no more leaks like we got in 2016, where we were almost immediately able to assert that the Russian government was behind the election meddling efforts. They're trying to do a better job of covering it up, but they're also trying to do a better job of buttoning up any leaks. So now we're looking at a really tough situation where the United States, their two primary diplomatic opponents are Russia and China, both of whom have intelligence assets on U.S. soil, without question. And right now we have really limited visibility on what they're up to, because through a series of errors, and now also through a concerted counterintelligence effort in Russia, you know, we're operating in large part through blind assumption right now, and that's a dangerous situation.
The Chinese thing, again, I said earlier today, you know, the DOD is, you know, is doing its, what do they call it, mill cloud, R&D and beginning mill cloud 2.0.
That stuff concerns me, man.
Oh, man. What happens when all of a sudden we go to look for the cloud on a Monday morning and it's like, the cloud's gone? Like, where is it?
Yeah, you know, I mean,
it's over Moscow. It's over Moscow.
It took one guy to get naked pictures of every celebrity you've ever heard of from the cloud. It took a guy to do that.
Right.
I worry that when we've already confirmed that Russian hackers have infiltrated the U.S. electrical grid, I worry about how good we are. I mean, because that's the nature of defense, right? It's easier to develop an offensive weapon than it is to develop a counter to it, right?
Right.
You know, we have hypersonic missiles. You can build the missiles first, but we don't currently know how to intercept them, right? We can build the clouds. We built the cloud. That's fine. They can build a way to infiltrate for it, but until they've built the way to infiltrate for it, we don't know how to try to counter it. It has to be an action and reaction when it comes to defending these types of things, and that's really disconcerting to me. You know, talk to any network security guy, and he'll tell you there is no such thing as a secure internet-based anything. All there is people who devote more time and resources to defending against offensive operations. I don't know, man. I'm sure there are people who know better than I do, but I do not like the idea of transitioning to cloud-based computing for the DOD at all.
Yeah. To me, it's like, okay, look, we're going to disconnect from everything. They've got to get somebody in here to steal stuff. You're not going to be allowed to go from the E-ring to the D-ring. We're going to go back to old school stuff. It ain't moving anywhere. We're just going to lock it down. The cloud to me, like, oh, my God, what is going
to
happen?
You know, and just think about the guys that you would be putting in charge of assessing access to this cloud. You know what I mean? When you're a new joint that checks in and you've got to have access to a computer for whatever reason, you've got to go through the S4 and whoever else, there's 60 different guys that have got to sign your check-in sheet just to get you access to a meal card. And now we're going to put all of our most pertinent information in this same cloud and assume that the Lance Corporal in charge of new joins is going to check the right boxes to give you the right access. I don't know. It seems like when you've got, you know, our military apparatus has, like, let's say more than 1 million people sticking a cat card into a keyboard someplace every day. That's an awful lot of places for something to go wrong. You know, it worries me to no end.
Yeah, it gives me the heebie-jeebies. It gives me the heebie-jeebies to,
You know, and what happens when, like, when our dispersion goes to the cloud, and then one day just no one in the military gets paid? Imagine what that would do to morale. You know, imagine what that would do to ongoing combat operations when guys know at home, you know, their wife can't pay the mortgage. These are real strategic concerns. It's not just a matter of losing paperwork or someone stealing secrets. It's a matter of affecting legitimate day-to-day operations. I don't know. I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't like it. I'm with you. I see it, and I see the stories, and it just gives me it gives me the creeps. Alex, tell everybody where they find your work.
Well, you can find me on thenewsrep.com. You can find me personally on alexhollings.com. And if you want to check me out on social media, go to facebook.com/AlexHollingsWriter or go to Twitter @AlexHollings52.
All right. interesting conversation about dealing with trauma. And, you know, in the training, you know, the wellness practices that I think we all know we need to create. We probably don't, you know, we're busy, so we don't spend too much time doing that. But interesting perspective, especially about the drinking thing, because let me just tell you, when, to me, I know that's true, okay? And, but when I thought about saying it on All Marine Radio, I was like, oh, shit, man. I can hear it. I can hear everybody going, click, 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 click. See you, Mac. Like, what did he just say? But here's the deal. I know that it's true, right? And so to me, and I know it. I interview people all the time, and I say, tell me about shit. I even asked my sister. You'll hear it tomorrow. Tell me about dealing with trauma and alcohol and drugs. And, you know, her response, you'll have to tune in to hear it, but you'll hear.
And honestly, I think people really should. Anybody listening now, make sure you do.
And
it's an important interview.
And so, but I can accept when somebody says, I'm not going to quit drinking. I'm going to cut it back to being a social drinker as opposed to what I do. You know what? If that works, fine. But if it doesn't work, right, you've got to evolve it into something that works and something that doesn't work the cipher lock and allow the gorillas to, again, if the gorillas were confined to your life, I'm okay with that. You want to fuck your life up? That's fine. But what happens is the gorillas never, they're undisciplined. They don't just maraud in your life. They maraud into the lives of your children. They into your spouse or your significant other and into your extended family and to your friends. That ain't right.
You know, and I think an important thing to point out here, you know, when you were saying, I knew as soon as I said it that there was going to be people that, you know, would roll their eyes. You are that guy we were talking about. You are that first sergeant, that sergeant major, that colonel that's been there. So when you're telling people this, you're not just offering empty platitudes, you know, that you read in a counseling book before this group meeting. What you're offering is legitimate insight into the perspective of a guy who's hurt, a guy been in your shoes.
Yeah, and you know, I'll tell you, look, if you don't believe me, if you don't want to take my word, do you want to take his word? He was a caisson. He was a Lance Corporal at caisson. Do you want to take his word? Do you want to take my sister's word? Right? Do you want to take his word? Right? He's, you know, 3 times to Iraq, 2x to Afghanistan, right? United States Marine Corps gunner. You want to take his word? Whose word do you want? And what would impact you? And again, I'm not saying that if you say I'm not going to quit drinking, okay. Here's the point: you need to control that behavior, right? So that you can live the life that you want to live. And the life that you want to live is not a life where you damage the people that you love on a regular basis. And with that,
absolutely.
Right? With that, all the heads nod. Right. Okay, then you figure it the fuck out. But I'm just going to tell you what. Just listen to this guy. Kason dude comes home and he's angry. And for 20 to 30 years, he drinks and he's out of control when he drinks. At least some of the time. Okay, some of the times he might be happy and having a good time. A lot of times, you know, and ask his family, ask his first
wife. Well, you know, the guy you're talking about, you know, we spoke about it last time I was on. The guy you're talking about is my dad. You know, he's a guy who came home from Vietnam and got lost in his unhealthy coping mechanisms, and it affected his relationships forever. You know, he passed away recently. I love my dad. He made plenty of mistakes, and a lot of those mistakes were born out of drinking. You know, they really were.
And you know, what's irritating to me is this whole concept of training us. I don't know that I need to go to therapy and have somebody ask me, how did that make you feel? How did that make you feel? How did that make you feel? What I need is somebody to train me about these things that are now part of my life. I've got trained to do a lot of shit in my life. I think I'm a pretty substantial human being. If you train me, I'll figure it out. And I think a lot of Marines are like that. But to be honest with you,
I think so too.
We don't get that training. And you know what? And maybe it's training that we have to go seek. Maybe it's something that should be given.
Right now there is training available, but the problem is that you need to be at a certain place to be willing to try to make a positive change.
Right.
And when you're at your worst, a lot of times you don't feel as though you have the energy. You don't have the motivation to make things better, because as far as you're concerned, they won't be. It won't get better. So I might as well stay here. You know, it's easy, if you're in a good place, it's easy to pick up the phone and call somebody. When you're in a bad place, it's hard to go Google where you can find help, cold call them, you know what I mean? Share the thing with them that you've been hiding from the people in your life. You know, that's the thing that we need training to be able to compensate for. We need the training to be readily available, but we need, as individuals, to be ready and willing to reach out when we need to reach out. And that's the hurdle to overcome. The solution, I don't know, but that's the hurdle we need to overcome.
And an element of that is we seek it out, that we have to want to do that. So to me, it's a very interesting, but that piece, and then I think being full up round, right? And again, not perfect, because you're not going to be that guy, but being full up round, coming home to your community, and then you have these Grinch moments when your heart grows 3 times because you just became an exporter of what you know to, of the truths, the gospel of All Marine Radio. You're not getting over it. The best you can learn to coexist with it, and it's okay to be damaged. Okay? It's okay.
Oh, yeah.
And so then all of a sudden you change somebody's life, and how good do you feel? You have to be tethered to the earth because you're floating. And I've had these experiences now over the course of the last month, over and over and over, to the point where it's becoming like crazy. And it's a wonderful crazy to have, and it completes the homecoming. I left my community to go off to go be a Marine. I come back with all those experiences. I come back with coping mechanisms for the things that disturb me. I come back to continue to live a purpose-driven life. And anybody who's affected with trauma, I know I can at least have a conversation with you, and I believe that I can help you. And what a great way to come home, right?
Absolutely, man. You know, it's the gift of the sacrifice, right?
It's right.
The fact that you hurt before allows you to give this gift to people of understanding
and
commiseration.
And my point is, we can all do it. We all know the truth, and we've all seen it and lived it as Marines, as men and women who've deployed around this world, whether you fought or not. You've seen it. You've seen stress. You've seen bad stuff. And every one of us can be an exporter. And if you can be an exporter, then you can have the Grinch experience. And there is no experience like the Grinch experience. You know? It's awesome. And the only way I can describe it is, you're finally home. I'm contributing. I feel awesome. I'm helping all these people. And I will tell you what, there's a ton of people in your community that are dealing with trauma that don't say shit. A ton of them, whether it's sexual assault, child abuse, violent crime, losing a child to cancer, they are all over the place.
And awful as trauma is, the fact that it can be a common thread to bind us is a value. There's a value in it, you know? From the worst of us can come the best of us, you know what I mean? It can be what brings our community together across cultural, social barriers.
And again, to me,
understanding.
Right, what it does for us as a group, as a tribe, is it provides that role for us, that purpose-driven role that we see, the way we see ourselves, the way we live our lives in our own community, and it's kind of this piece that fits perfectly into place. I'm home. I'm living the life that I want to live. I have those wellness behaviors in place to deal with my shit. And again, it's not going to be perfect, but it's going to keep me between the left and right lateral limit, which is where I need to live my life. And I also give back. And I give back and I help people. And when I help people, I get this great feeling like I used to get when I used to help Marines and the light would go on. I'm home. This is good, and it's solid, and I love it. And it's, to me, the completion of the circle, right? I leave, I do stuff, and then when I come back, I'm able to be a part of this community and be a strong, contributing, good part of it. And that's the kind of part I want to be. And so, it's honestly, all these discussions over the course of going on 2.5 years, I have a PhD in post-combat related mental health. I didn't get it at a university, right? I only got it. I've got it by
through direct interaction.
Direct interaction.
You know.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. What else you got going on today?
Oh man, I've got a lot of writing left to do. Right now, I'm working on a story about Syria, as we were discussing. But you know, so another thing you'll see coming from me later this week. Totally unrelated, a little bit lighter, but I've got a review of Amazon's Jack Ryan that should publish here in the next day or two. Honestly, it's worth a watch. It's not very realistic, but that's not what I look for in a Jack Ryan story.
Right.
I didn't expect them to lower an analyst down into a nuclear submarine either.
Right.
But The Hunt for October is a rad movie, you know? long story short, if you want to read my review, you can. But, you know, it's worth a watch. Give it a look.
All right. Alex Hollings, tell everybody where they find you.
Find me on thenewsrep.com. You can find me on alexhollings.com. If you want to find me on social media, facebook.com/AlexHollingsWriter, and on Twitter, it's @AlexHollings52. And, you know, hit me up on Twitter especially. I'm pretty active on there, so I'll probably respond to you.
All right. I'll give you a call later on today.
You got it, man. Great being on the show.
No, always. Thanks. That is the one and only Alex Hollings here on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio. If you haven't, we'll take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. Don't touch that dial. A couple more things, and then you're excused for the day.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.